And that is Fats Domino. I forget his French name. He's from Louisiana.
Antoine Dominique.
There you go. I asked the right guy. Did I mention Phil Collins knows his music? Antoine
Dominique. And Dominique. He's a native French speaker.
Native French speaker. Yeah. This makes him a Quebecer. So this is... Phil has some announcements. We have a couple of meetings.
Right. Well, there is a film on Tuesday, February the 11th in Hamilton. The Hamilton Voices of Palestine film series will show Apollo of Gaza at the New Vision United Church, 24 Main Street West in Hamilton, Tuesday, February the 11th at 7 p.m. And for the entire month of February, you can go to the Harborfront Center, 235 Queens Quay West, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and that will be Colin Kaepernick's curated photography exhibit, which means that Colin Kaepernick picked the pictures that he wants you to look at.
Very good. And where is that again?
At the Harborfront Center at 235 Queens Quay West.
Terrific.
And it's every day, 7 days a week. Opens at 10 a.m., open till 9.
Well,
so, I mean, those are long hours. Nobody has an excuse not to go.
All right. Thanks a lot, Phil Conlon. And with us now is Keith Bollender, who's got a great new book. It's called Manufacturing the Enemy, The Media War Against Cuba. And welcome to the show. Good to see you.
Thanks, Phil. It's always good to be back.
The Cubans are always somewhere in every news cycle. There's a Cuba shows up. By the way, you've got a public meeting. Let's make sure we mention you got one coming up. You're going to be talking somewhere in town.
Yeah. I'm doing a lecture this Friday, February 7th, at the Friends House at 60 Lothar Avenue, just north of the St. George subway station. It's being sponsored by the Cuban Friendship Association of Toronto. So I'm going to have a little talk on my book, and also there's going to be some information about the Che Guevara Brigade later this year in Cuba.
Yeah, well, that's that's the Friends House on Lowther.
Yes,
isn't it? Yeah, that's a good spot. And bless the Quakers, by the way. They've always one group that never gets quite stampeded by the people who run Washington. Well, as I say, it's Keith Bollender, and I like the fact that you're taking on the touchy subject of our media, because the stance of American media and Canadian is that they're just reporting on things, and the U.S. government has a position, the Canadian government has a position, and they're just sort of honestly, fairly, and with balance reporting. But according to your book, that ain't necessarily so. Far from it. I'm glad you undertook it. Why did you decide to take this matter up?
Well, again, it was just something that I'd seen so much. My background is journalism. I had worked for the Toronto Star as a freelancer for a number of years. And it was just the exposure of so much misinformation and bias that the corporate media, the book focuses on corporate media, mostly in the States, but some of the worst examples come from the Canadian media, including the Toronto Star and the UK. And it's just, it's amazing how consistent the corporate media has been in presenting one-sided, misinformed bias against Cuba, even before the revolution. Yeah. But predominantly since the revolution, and it's incredible how they've created this narrative of nothing the Cuban government has ever done has ever been of any worth.
Yes.
There's a lot to criticize about Cuba, like any country, but it's when the media takes it to the next level and they become so biased and so basically reporting so much untruths that's what got me thinking, look, this deserves a book to cover in general why the corporate media does it, and then using some very specific examples of American and Western corporate media of how they've covered Cuba so unfairly.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, but since we've been talking to you over the years, you've produced a number of great books. Really, one of the last times we spoke to you, we were going through a phase where there was a so-called warming, and so that led to the. And it seems to me the importance of your writing, there's this idea that things are, for example, at the moment, Trump-driven. It's because he's a bad apple. He's a right-wing guy. But you, your book shows clearly, no, you know, you say that you picked the best of them, maybe Carter, I don't know, but and Obama, all proved to be painfully disappointing for anybody who thought there was going to be, quotes, fair play for Cuba.
Right. The media is bipartisan when it comes to covering Cuba. It really doesn't matter because they function as a corporate institution. And that reflects American foreign policy. And American foreign policy since the revolution, as you well know, has been regime change against Cuba. So it doesn't matter who's in the White House. And it doesn't matter really who's controlling the corporate media, even though these days there's such a narrow amount of businesses that control the 75% of all corporate media is controlled by six American businesses. It doesn't matter. The reporting on Cuba, you can really show how consistently misinformed and one-sided it's been. And it's funny, the Obama situation is really interesting because when Obama in 2014, he announced the opening and the move towards normalization with Cuba, which the Cuban side supported 100%. It was really interesting how the corporate media reacted. They were on board with Obama's move towards normalization, not for the fact that it was going to help the Cuban people, but they perceived it as the best, newest way to effect regime change against the revolution, which was Obama's stated purpose.
I hate to use that old cliche, but a carrot stick. You have Mr. Carrot, and then you have Mr. Stick. And you're definitely right. I mean, the idea was Cubans now love Obama. They want him. They you know, and they're going to go follow us down that path.
Right. The perception was Obama was going to open up Cuba to American technology, capitalism, democracy, culture. The Cubans knew all about that anyway. But the perception was now that the Cubans are going to see modernity through an American lens, they're going to finally get rid of their revolutionary government. And that was the expectation. And the media fell right in line with that. And it was interesting when Trump turned back to the stick.
Yes.
How did corporate media react? Well, they reacted fairly negatively towards Trump's repositioning the hostility because they still believe the best way to regime change was through Obama's carrot. So it was a really interesting dynamic going on with corporate media.
Yeah, they are a study in hypocrisy. Your book really, I saw so many nice quotes in here, but the fact that you point out that a story about Cuba has to have certain markers built in. You have to use the word communist.
Yeah, there are trigger words. Like, they'd never call the Cuban government the Cuban government. It's always the Cuban regime.
It has to be a regime.
So as soon as you say the word regime, the reader internalizes what that means. And they always put in front of it, like you said, the communist Cuban government. They don't when they cover Saudi Arabia, they don't say the medieval monarchy of Saudi Arabia. They never use those terms. They never use those qualifiers. But with Cuba, always.
They start to introduce words like benign or pro-reform. And it's like with the Shah. Remember, the Shah was reform.
Yeah.
An absolute torturing dictatorship.
One of the examples I used with Saudi Arabia is when the Saudi Arabian government finally allowed women to drive. That was such an incredible thing for the media in the United States, showing, oh, look how progressive the leadership in Saudi Arabia is. And meanwhile, it's just because they let them to drive. On the other hand, when Cuba does something absolutely, completely in line with what their government interests are, they are vilified for it.
Well, also, you get into this very nicely, into the subject of the presumption that America has, which also the reader, listener buys into, which they're the paragon of all these things like democracy, freedom. Here I am reading today that CNN is going to have a debate. And Tulsi Gabbard, for example, who's already distinguished herself as a good debater, she has attracted support, she has the sufficient funds, but they say, nope, she's not going to be in the debate. But Bloomberg, he's going to be in the debate because he happens to be a billionaire and he can give them. And you say, are you sure you got the best democracy?
Well,
and then you pointed out the Electoral College, for crying out loud. Go ahead, expand on it.
They have the best democracy that money can buy. You know, and again, you have a democracy where the person with the most votes doesn't win because of this arbitrarily constructed electoral college, which is based on the slave era. So the thing with American media coverage of Cuba has worked so effectively because for such a long time Americans couldn't go visit Cuba. So you could have no American challenging the narrative that corporate media was presenting. And then, getting back to Obama, when he opened things up and thousands of Americans were going to Cuba to see for themselves, there was actual political pressure from individual Americans coming back and say, wait a minute, you know, Cuba has, it's good, it's bad, and it's indifferent, but it's not how what we believe it to be because of how the corporate media has presented it.
Yes. Well, I was so glad you made that point. I mean, by the way, that to me, I always say to Americans, well, what's this about freedom? You're not allowed to travel. Even when Obama was loosening it up, that still was one of those check the box visits, you know. And if you can't go and see for yourself, can't exercise your right to travel, then you're going to be a prisoner of the media and of your own government. But that has not sunk into people. And you have a great quote, I guess, one of my favorites in the book. I don't know who said it, but some wag that you quoted said, well, we read our papers and we accept it as probably true and we digest that. He said, except for the rare item where we have some personal knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as long as you don't know something specific about it. But that's the greatest weapon corporate media has, the trust between themselves and the readership. You have to believe that the corporate media is supposedly, especially in the United States, where it's supposedly a free press, that what you're being told is the truth. But we all know truth is very subjective, and from a specific point of view, truth can be really manipulated.
Yeah. By the way, this is Keith Bolander, and the book is Manufacturing the Enemy. Tip of the hat to Noam Chomsky. By the way, a lot of people do, but that's one of the classic books, Manufacturing Consent. It's absolutely, and I noticed that you pay tribute to Chomsky, and he
I was talking to him
admiring your book.
Yeah, I actually sent him an email just saying I want to give the title to my latest book of this, and he said, yeah, go ahead.
Yes. The Media War Against Cuba. You have somebody that I've always disliked, so I was glad you called him out. The sneaky way to do anti-Cuba propaganda, the award would go to Mr. Christophe of the New York Times, where he's going to deal with the facts, which is the medical care. They have a lower infant mortality rate than the United States itself. But not that I think the U.S. must be pretty far down the list by this time. But a lot. So he has to deal with the positive. So what did he choose to do? Not only were you a journalist, but you teach it. That's a nice trick. How did you do that?
It's classic corporate media technique. So you give the first two or three paragraphs saying exactly what you said. Oh, yeah, you could. I think the lead paragraph said, you know, you could actually live longer if you were a Cuban than if you were an American because of the health care, because of the style of life, all sorts of different aspects of Cuban society. So the first paragraph, the second paragraph, you're thinking, okay, this is going to be a balanced report on Cuba. And then the rest of the article is nothing but, sure, Cuba has universal health care, but they have no medicines, or their hospitals are in bad shape, or some other critical comment about the Cuban medical situation, or the Cuban universal health care, or the Cuban housing. So all these negative qualifiers
she lives on a potholed street,
right,
in a little apartment.
And nowhere in this article that had to be like 2,000 or 3,000 words, not one word mentioned the American embargo and the possible effect that might have on Cuba's ability not to to raise their standard of their health care or their housing. So you can't do that in corporate media. You can always seem balanced, hit all the negative qualifiers, and never ever mention the effect that the American embargo just might have on Cuba's ability to advance socially and economically.
Yeah. And by the way, they love because they have mistreated Cuba, abused Cuba since the war with Spain and a capture of it. But they, as you say, they don't talk about the fact that, and they like to use the word Cuba's isolated. Well, at the United Nations, for 28 years in a row, they have voted on the embargo against Cuba. And how's that going?
Well, yeah, but the corporate media never mentions that in the United States, so it's in an informational. It's funny. That's
a
good
Guam
point.
And the United States, I think, or this in 2019 it was Ukraine joined them.
The point you bring up and what I make in the book is that it's not just what the media tells you; it's what they don't tell you that has as much effect on creating these negative perceptions about the Cuban and what the revolutions is all about. But also one of the things is really important is it's the supposed left-wing liberal media like the Times, the Toronto Star,
the New Yorker, the
Guardian. Mm-hmm. Those are much more dangerous.
I agree with you.
Because you can identify the right-wing ideological media.
Because they put it on the table.
Right.
The other guy pretends he likes you.
Exactly. So you're reading something in the Times, and it's coming across as a criticism, and if you don't know it, you're thinking, well, the Times must be telling the truth about this anti-Cuban narrative because they're supposedly more sympathetic, and in fact, they're just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah. And talking about worse, your book really underlines some nasty stuff. There was this phenomenon called the Brothers to the Rescue, which was a quasi-terrorist operation. And out of it all, as you relate in the book, the writers for the Miami Herald were also working for Radio Martí, and being paid by the U.S. government.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
By the way, isn't that gross interference in the internal affairs? I know the U.S. is very touchy about this, and the Globe wants to protect me from Russians, but how about that? Radio Martí and the Miami Herald being paid by
That's how the free press works in corporate America when they are in support of American government foreign policy. And that's probably the case of the Cuban Five, the five Cuban intelligence agents that were sent to Miami to infiltrate anti-revolutionary terrorist organizations based in South Florida. That's probably the most egregious example of corporate media and how far they would go to maintain the anti-revolutionary narrative, and the fact that so many journalists on the Miami Herald were paid thousands and thousands of dollars to write articles in the Miami Herald during the trial of the Cuban Five, all anti-Cuban. So these five were convicted in the minds of the public readership, thanks to the American government paying these reporters to write just horrendously ridiculous.
It could not be more egregious. And by the way, Radio Martí also cost billions over the years. And it's in violation of all laws. I mean, you're not really supposed to broadcast into another state's territory. That is actually, we don't need all this modern talk about false news and all that. That is not legal.
Right, but again, Radio Martí, you can identify their ideological perspective immediately, and it's blocked in Cuba. No one listens to it in Cuba. But it was the Miami Herald reporters writing in the Miami Herald, the supposed one of the national newspaper experts on Latin American affairs.
People do defer to the Miami Herald.
Condemning these five Cuban intelligence agents before they even had the trial. That was much more impactful as far as the anti-revolutionary coverage went.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Keith Bolander. Get this book, The Media War Against Cuba. By the way, I know it's at a different book list, and I know the address is 777 Bathurst, because the proprietor there just turned 77, so he remembers the numbers of his store. And Keith is going to be talking on Friday, the 7th, at 10 Lowther, right?
at the friend's house at 60 Lowther Avenue.
60.
From 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m.
Very important people catch this. And well, because, look, it's hard to fight back, Keith, frankly. I mean, let's take remember my hero, and now I won't be able to say his name, who wrote Listen, Yankee. You remember the Texas sociologist?
C. Wright Mills.
C. Wright Mills. Yeah. From the beginning, he said, hey, wait a minute. Listen, Yankee, we're getting this all wrong. That was the whole point of his essay. They are doing good things. Land reform was needed. Medical care for everybody is needed. Literacy is needed. And they're delivering on promises. Something doesn't happen in the United States. But what did C. Wright Mills get? His reward was he got pounded.
Right. That voice is so rare, if not impossible, to be heard in the corporate media.
Yeah, folks like yourself. I mean, why isn't there a debate, by the way? I mean, what happened in the good old days when they said, well, look, Keith Boland has got a book on Cuba. And
yes, self-reflection is not a hugely important aspect of corporate media.
Where is their courage? Why not an interaction? You know, I can remember a time there used to be debates. You could go and hear different points. And matter of fact, about Cuba. In the early days, because there was love for Fidel and there was love for what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
And so there were actually debates, but then the hegemony finally set in.
And one of I covered in the book, one of the worst examples of just horrible coverage of Cuba was when Fidel passed away. It's been more than 3 years.
And the Toronto Star distinguished itself.
The Toronto Star was probably one of the worst examples of anti-revolutionary coverage. The columnist Rosie DiMano was down in Cuba for the funeral, and her column she wrote on it was just,
you know, she was a knockoff of Christoph in the sense that she said, oh, okay, you have a lower infant mortality rate. Okay, you've got education. Okay, you have a sovereign country. Well, I spit on that.
That's exactly what it was. She had the perspective of it doesn't matter what Fidel or the revolution brought to the people themselves. She was speaking for all 11 million people in Cuba, that they were all happy that he had passed away and that now that the country could...
Cubans were his prisoners.
It was unbelievable.
Here was a leader, by the way, who could walk down the street and talk to the people. And we have leaders who nobody ever sees them anymore, except, I mean, in the U.S., certainly. They're in these strange vehicles that they say, you couldn't blow that up with dynamite.
But if a Canadian journalist of the corporate media wanted to say that about our Canadian politicians, that's one thing. When you have a foreign media coming in and telling, again, what another country's social political makeup should be, how they should treat their leaders, that is even a higher level of arrogance. And that's corporate media's history against Cuba. Relating even back to the revolution, if you remember the Maine, American battleship that was blown up in Havana Harbor during the...
By strange persons unknown, leading to America taking it over.
Yeah, and that led to the corporate media at that time creating a war fever in the States to support Americans' military strategy of invading Cuba at the time, which worked perfectly. So American...
And Puerto Rico.
And Guam and the Philippines.
And by the way, I have to say, why don't we do some of that? Cuba, a sugar-producing country in the Caribbean, it has neighbors, similar kind of profile. And the U.S. is quite satisfied to remove the leader of Haiti, who was elected, Mr. Aristide. And now we have just a succession of mobsters seems to be running the place. And the U.S. is there. Even some of their mercenaries are showing up. People have no education, no literacy, no prospects. Shouldn't we sort of tear and compare? I mean, what happened in Cuba, their life after the Cuban Revolution as compared to Haiti?
Sure, but that doesn't follow the narrative of corporate media.
And Puerto Rico, where we had Trump throwing paper towels at people after the hurricane. Here's a paper towel for you.
But you look at how the corporate media has covered Bolivia, where there was a military coup, and it was not according to the corporate media. And then you look at what's happening in Chile, which is more aligned to the United States, where there's protesting against the government. But they're criminal protesters, where those who are in Bolivia are demonstrators against the government. It's all the historical concept of corporate media aligning itself with American foreign policy dictates.
Yes. And by the way, you almost say in so many words, they define democracy as capitalism. And if you touch private property, that's it. I mean, there's no, and you could think of Iran when they had Mossadegh, a popular leader, people elected him, they loved him, and they engineered a regime change. And what had he done? He had taken over the oil, right? And then you have Mr. Is it Carranza in Mexico, took over the oil. And they said, oh, well, that's bad. That's a bad government.
Yeah, exactly.
And he, by the way, that president of Mexico later was a friend of Fidel. In his last days of his life, he was a supporter of Fidel.
America defines its democracy under economic conditions. And if you subscribe to that, if you agree to it, then you're fine. So it doesn't really matter what type of political system you have, as long as you conform to American economic interests.
Yeah. I got his name. It's Cardenas. Was the president of Mexico who said it. And by the way, you point this out in your book about Cuba. He, when he took over the oil companies and said they should be under Mexican sovereignty, he said, and we're going to compensate you, and we will compensate you according to how much value you declared that they had. And they said, oh, no, it's a lot more than that. And he said, well, this is what, when you filed your tax returns, you said it wasn't worth anything, but we're going to give you the amount that you put.
Now, that's exactly what's happened in Cuba. That's exactly what happened in Cuba. The Cuban government offered compensation based on the tax
bingo
that the American companies valued at, and again, the corporate media to this day still claims that that land was confiscated without compensation. And again, it's what you don't tell the readership. It's a complete lie, because the Cubans offered compensation and the American government absolutely refused to accept it and prohibited any of the American companies from accepting compensation.
Yeah. By the way, I've got to make sure I say Brookings Institute, would you expose them. I mean, and again, people really respect them. The Brookings Institute, there's a report out today. Well, you point out they talked about Cuba and never mentioned the embargo. You guys all have PhDs?
How do you do that? you have to have a tremendous amount of self-control to write a 6,000-8,000 word report criticizing the Cuban economy without one word, literally without one word mention of the American embargo against Cuba. I don't know how you do that.
You have to be assiduous, I guess. You have to work at it. You have to. And how does one advance himself in the media, environment, is being able to manufacture that kind of nonsense, right?
But you can't.
They say, is there anybody in the room could write a really good lying report? They say, well, this Frankie over here is crazy as a bedbug. Okay, give him the job.
You can't. One of the concepts I talk in the book is that, why do individual journalists subscribe to the corporate media's false narrative against Cuba? Well, they wouldn't have risen to the level of being a national corporate journalist unless they subscribe to exactly what the perception is supposed to be negatively about the revolution.
Yeah, Christophe, DeMano, they know what's expected.
It's a perfect example.
Yeah. We're speaking to Keith Bolander in the final minutes here. The book is The Media War Against Cuba, very important book. And I know you can get it different book lists, 777 Bathurst. And Keith is going to be talking at 60 Lowther on the 7th at 7 o'clock. Am I right?
This Friday, yep.
And it's the Friends House, I think it's called. I like the word Friends. I wish there was more of that. In the last minute, I was, of course, initiated through the Cuba experience somewhat, and there were writers like Herb Matthews, and they've all gone by the boards. It strikes me that things are worse. I mean, actually, I think you point out that the monopolization having increased has actually led to worse and worse, worse reporting.
Absolutely. Herbert Matthews lost his career because of his balanced reporting on Cuba. And even more so today, the expression, the media is is allowed to write what it likes as long as the elites like what they write.
A nice proverb, a good place to close. This, thank you, Keith Bollender. The book is Manufacturing the Enemy, The Media War Against Cuba. We probably have a little Cuban music. And, of course, he's going to be at 60 Lowther on the 7th at 7 o'clock.
Thank you.